Good morning, everyone, and a very warm welcome indeed to Lambeth for 2 days, which I hope will stretch us, challenge us, and help us forward. I want to begin by saying a very warm word of thanks to those who've come great distances for this meeting. I'm very much aware of how privileged we are to have with us people of very considerable standing in their different worlds, some of whom have made real efforts to be with us. And I think all of those working here on our program are particularly grateful for that. I would also like to acknowledge the enormous help that we've had in organizing this conference from the trustees of the Lambeth Fund, who have generously supported this project. As you will see from your program, this first session is a succession of short presentations, two from Archbishop Vincent and myself as hosts of the conference, and two from our brethren from Jerusalem, about whom more later. But I thought that it might be worthwhile for me to spend 10 or 15 minutes right at the start in setting out just a few things about the vision for this meeting, what lies behind it, what we hope to achieve. This is a conference on the situation and the future of Christian communities in the Holy Land. And one of the questions we have immediately to answer, of course, is why does it matter? In a very general sense, this is part of the challenge that Christian communities throughout the Middle East face. A problem which has to do with the pressures that are felt right throughout the region on Christian communities, historic Christian communities, leading to many, many Christians from the region leaving. And part of the difficulty of that is, as has often been said, that historically speaking, the Arab identity and the Muslim identity have never just been the same thing. And it's been quite important in the life of Arab societies in the last century and more that they have not been the same thing. Christian communities have played an important, critical, galvanizing role there. It's very significant that Muslim societies, Arab societies, can show the signs of pluralism. But that is, in a sense, a very broad and general observation, which doesn't begin to address the specific challenges of Christians in the Holy Land. And I want to begin with a very short reflection as a Christian on why it matters. Christianity, as is so frequently said, is an historical religion. At the center of Christian faith is a set of events which occurred in a particular place at a particular time. Because of that, it's not open to Christians to say that Christianity is whatever they choose it to be. Christians are answerable, they are responsible to what happened in the Holy Land 2 millennia ago. They go back to be questioned and enlarged, to be challenged and inspired by specific events. And the connection of Christians now with those specific events 2,000 years ago is a vital part of Christian faith. In that perspective, the continuity of Christian worship and witness in the places where these events occurred is not a small thing for Christian believers. It's a kind of Gnosticism, as we say in Christian theology, a kind of cutting loose from history if we say that the presence of our brothers and sisters in the land of our Lord does not matter to us. That's the broadest possible theological justification, I think, for being interested in what happens in the Holy Land in general and for Christian communities in particular. And it's also part of what gives us both the challenge and the difficulty, not to mention the promise, of interfaith encounter. If Christianity really is a historical religion, there is no way in which we can avoid coming to terms with our relation with Judaism and with Islam. We are bound up with that, as some people have said, family quarrel between parts of the Abrahamic tradition, and we cannot cut loose from that, despite all the temptations to do so over the centuries. It's also perhaps worth noting that Christianity is one of those exotic Eastern religions. One of the saddest things to happen in Christian history has been the assumption that Christianity is bound to be wedded to Western, in inverted commas, culture. And that's not so. To remind ourselves that the specific roots of Christianity are not in Europe, and not even in North America, is really quite good for us all. Christianity is an Eastern religion. It is strange to the world of the capitalist West as it is strange to the world of the farther East. And that strangeness is part of it all. So to be concerned with the Holy Land is to be concerned with the specificity of Christian faith, the relations out of which it grew, the relations it has forged across history. And that's crucial to our own sense here in the West of what it is to be a Christian and the authenticity of what it is to be a Christian. Second, a lot of people talk about the Holy Land. It has generated an immense amount of debate, analysis, and general articulate anxiety. What's the point of having another conference on the Holy Land? Or to put it more bluntly, what is going to be different about this 2 days? The conference has already attracted a fair share of criticism in some quarters, fairly predictably, I think, and the only real response that can be made to that is the response we shall all be able to make by the end of proceedings tomorrow. We have to justify this conference. We have to show that it is different. Of course, no conference can do everything, and that is a crucial insight. There are areas of the entire situation which we shall not be able to touch on adequately or come to terms with fully. And I think we need to give ourselves permission not to try to cover everything. But that being said, I would like to think that these 2 days will at least involve us in approaching the problems of Christians in the Holy Land in a perspective very deeply informed by what many of us believe to be important about Christian theology. The Christian way values profoundly both truthfulness and charity. The phrase speaking the truth in love has sadly become a bit of a cliche. It normally means people's willingness to say unpleasant things whatever anybody else thinks. But speaking the truth in love is a very serious business. We are committed in these 2 days to truth-telling, and that means to saying things that will be deeply uncomfortable for others. To do that with a commitment not to walk away immediately is part of what we're looking for. Because for me as a Christian, as one of the conveners of this conference, it is essential to the Christian way and the Christian witness that we are able to say hard things and not to run away. Because we are committed to one another, bound to one another, or faithful to one another. So my hope is that one of the differences in these 2 days will be that we as a group preserve that faithfulness to one another in conversation. And I hope that out of that will come a longer term faithfulness and commitment among us that may perhaps help to move things forward. We're looking to find a language of truthfulness among us that's also a language of hopefulness and a language of, dare I say, valuing and even being grateful for one another. The hardest thing in the world is to be grateful for the stranger, the one who threatens. And yet that's the breakthrough point. We may or may not get to anywhere near that point in our discussions, but it's worth, I think, putting it on the table at the start and hoping. And that, thirdly, suggests a few things about the style of how we relate to one another. In the bad old days of the Cold War, it was often the case that people would be allowed out of their, I'm tempted to say, their cages in Eastern Europe to international events on the condition that they made a speech which was entirely predictable, what we used to refer to as the visa speech. It was the speech which had granted them their license to go out somewhere else. Visa speeches were always speeches, as I say, whose content you could guess in advance. They didn't necessarily relate to anything else that anybody else was saying at the conference. I've heard eloquent defenses in the past of the Soviet Union in the course of conferences on 4th century Christianity. Now, a speech that does not relate to what anyone else has said, and a speech that could in principle be made on any occasion, is not, I think, the kind of intervention we're hoping and praying for here. We are hoping and praying that people will say what they have to say with an awareness of who is listening, specifically, who is next to them, and how their words will be heard. That people will speak out of a real awareness that what they say has to be shaped by and responsive to this group in which we try to be committed to one another. So it's an exhortation to myself and everyone else involved to try not to speak as if nobody else had spoken, to try and bear in mind the actuality of the person next to you. And I hope that out of that might come not a consensus, because we're not looking for a consensus and we shan't find one, but out of that I hope might come a certain sensitivity to what I'll call the places where shared energy is being generated. If we are listening and responding, we may find that in unexpected moments and places of the discussion, there will be a shared energy, something that both speakers or all speakers are galvanized by, something which will prompt a step forward. So not only do I urge you to speak with that awareness, but I urge you also to listen for where the shared energy is coming. That is what will surprise us. And I do hope, rather, that by the end of tomorrow we may have been surprised by a few things. But for that to happen also, and bearing in mind what I said about commitment, we need ways of managing the pain and the discomfort that will inevitably arise in such a discussion. Pain and discomfort for people representing different communities in the Holy Land. Pain and discomfort for us well-meaning Westerners trying to be useful. Pain and discomfort in all kinds of ways. And we're bound to try and handle it together. Finally then, in terms of outcomes, it would be very nice if by the end of tomorrow we had saved the world. But bracketing that as probably not a very likely outcome, what do we want? As Archbishop Vincent and myself have said more than once, we want, above all, an increased, literate, compassionate awareness of what is actually happening in the Holy Land among our Christian brothers and sisters. We want that among Christians here, and we want it among those who make decisions in our governments too. But we want some practical steps. We want to know how we can help, and we want to be able to be specific about that. Of course we pray, and nothing is really more important than that. But how that fleshes itself out in the ways in which we can support and encourage our brothers and sisters, that too is part of what we are searching for. And lastly, under that heading, I would hope that some of the relations we are working at here in these 2 days will, as I've hinted earlier, translate into relationships that work globally and locally, that work here, that work in the Holy Land, that work through the friendships and the conversations that begin here. Despair is easy and hope is difficult. On the other hand, despair is despair, and hope is hopeful. Therefore, difficult as it may be, if anyone has a better idea than hope, we'd all be very glad to hear it. So I hope that in these 2 days, that will be in our minds also. There is every reason, humanly speaking, for not feeling very hopeful about the situation in the Holy Land. Let's be candid straight away. Every reason in the world. Therefore, those of us who are hopeful have to be very, very clear about our reasons for hope that are not particularly of this world. Our reasons that have to do with the God who has called us. The God who has called us, Christians, Jews, Muslims, and many others too, into a relationship with this place and this history. the God who has made himself known to us in this context. What an extraordinary agenda we have been left with. How do we live with it and deal with it? Yet if it is God who has set us that agenda, and if God is the God we all believe him to be, then hope is a natural consequence. I trust that's something we shall share as our conversations unfold in these days.